Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself. We talk with some of the people who bicycle San Francisco, which as a world-class city is also fast becoming one of the planet's bike-friendliest. Home to 744,000 persons, we talked with some of those who make up the growing number of cyclists and regularly ride the Golden Gate City. It's our hope that in conjunction with the San Francisco Biking Report Card, and soon the About San Francisco excerpt will appear in my upcoming book, How America Can Bike and Grow Rich, both of which you can find at bikeroute.com, that you will go away with a better feeling for what it's like to cycle the streets of San Francisco.
Speaking from his home in San Francisco's Russian Hill neighborhood, we have MIT-educated engineer Frank Chan here with us today to tell us about San Francisco cycling. In the words ahead, we also talk about the movie he made that is rapidly gaining a cult following all throughout the Golden Gate City and beyond. Called Russian Hill Roulette, it shows Frank powering straight up some of the steepest streets in the world.
Okay, so Frank, how are you doing today, guy?
Oh, not bad. These are the long summer days.
Excellent. Wow. Well, so that our listeners out there across the nation can know, those that are interested in coming to San Francisco and riding their bike there, what kind of cyclist are you? Are you a everyday regular cyclist, and are you recreation or utility, or how would you define yourself?
Nowadays, I'm pretty much more a utilitarian cyclist, just someone who rides a bike, just get around, go see other people, get my groceries. I started off as more of the recreational weekend warrior type. Someone who wanted to get out on the weekends and ride some hills. And I gradually worked in the cycling into my day-to-day life such that you don't feel as much of a need to do that because it's more about doing what you believe in on Friday, I guess.
Huh, okay. So how long have you been rolling the streets in San Francisco?
I'd always come up here occasionally to ride for the Rim Headlands, but I've lived up here for about 4 years now.
Okay, so it's like a daily thing. That city of 600 or 700 plus thousand people and 49 square miles, 7 by 7, as it were,
right.
Does it seem small to you now after 4 years?
It definitely does.
Really?
Our mutual hometown of Hayward, even just trying to get from place to place there, you'll have to ride for a mile just to get anywhere.
Whereas right
here, it really feels compact. Like you can get to downtown in a bit less than a mile, or maybe it's a little bit more than a mile. But just with everything so small, certainly in being able to bike around, it does feel small.
Okay, now when Frank says mutual hometown of Hayward, California, we both grew up in Hayward, which is on the other side of the bay, about 30
right.
miles from San Francisco, would you say?
Right, an East Bay suburb.
An East Bay suburb, and it's separated from San Francisco by the San Francisco Bay, and it's a whole different weather pattern and a whole different geography. I mean, you grew up in Fairway Park, correct?
Right.
And I grew up in just below Cal State Hayward, and about 5 miles difference, and it seemed like it was just like a long, long 5 miles with hardly anything in between.
Right.
Whereas San Francisco is like just compacted and impacted, and every which way and everywhere you go, there's a gotcha. It's something you got to watch out for.
Okay, I'm sure I would have to budget an hour to get to ride from my parents' home to where you grew up in Hayward.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like you'd have to budget an hour to get to anywhere in the city.
I know. Why is that? Was that 5 miles or 10 miles? It was 10 miles. I remember to Union City, so it must have been about 8 or 9 miles.
I think so.
Okay. Okay. Well, maybe
I think it's also the route you'd have to plan. Right.
Right. Right.
The good thing about the
And also what's funny is we're going to talk about hills a little bit later on in this podcast.
Right.
I grew up at the base of one of the most ominous hills in all of the East Bay, and that's the hill that leads up to Cal State Hayward. And now you're living in and amongst hills there in San Francisco, some of the most
right.
precipitous, and that's what you're all about here. You've got a video online I want to talk about in a little bit that is just a mind blower, where you're doing 31% hills straight up. Amazing stuff that that is. Now, are you car free, Frank?
I know I still have a car. I drive end up probably about once a month. I'm in the process of trying to either give it to my sister or maybe get rid of it. But I believe like in about a year, I should be, within the year, I should be car free.
Okay. Now, where does that car live? Does it live? Do you have a garage for it there in San Francisco?
Yeah, I do have a garage.
And would you rather not have that garage full of bicycles?
No, that'd be nice. That's a nice thought. I actually bring them in to my, I guess you call it, living room, dining room. I tried to like seamlessly integrate it with my decor. There's that brief clip in the movie where I take the bike off the rack, and that's where they're now. I've just heard so many unfortunate stories about people having their bike stolen from their garage. I'm not sure if it's that those garage doors can be opened pretty easily.
I see, yeah,
or
wow.
Or that your neighbor opens the garage and leaves it open.
So you get a mutual garage situation?
Yeah.
So you share that one door with other neighbors?
Right. I think those kind of situations can...
Yeah, yeah.
And you may think that, oh, it's in the garage. I don't need to lock it to anything. I think that's how... Unfortunately, what happens sometimes.
Well, we've talked with some of the women on this podcast, like Judy B. and and Mona Carone, and they talk about the fact that they've got one bicycle. How many bikes do you have, Frank?
Oh, well, I have a LFP3. There's the kind of nice road bike that is very much of a fair weather bike. That's the one you see in the movie. That's the one used that I ride up to Marin or more kind of outlying areas where I really need the kind of road bike advantage just to eat up the miles. I have my main commuting bike, which is sort of a mountain frame. I bought it during this is about like a dozen years ago, but the whole 80s, 90s revolution of everybody getting a mountain bike, even though all they ride it on is the street.
Right.
It's kind of like the SUV of its time. So I finally put some slicks on it and put a rack on it, so it's sort of like almost like a touring bike. And then I also have my old beater from college, and I did one to kind of park in areas where I don't feel I won't actually be despondent about stolen.
Wow, excellent. Now you're an MIT graduate, which means that by association, that by geographical association, that you were in Boston for about 6 years riding back there. And that's pretty much where you, from talking with you earlier, you were saying that's pretty much where you got your introduction to cycling, was in college, was it in Boston of all places?
I think so. It just is more of a way to get around. When I rode in my youth, it was just, I think I was just killing time. But that's where I had to ride to get to class, and I had to ride fast because usually I woke up late. I was just rushing. When you kind of learn to ride in the slush or the snow or the rain there, you certainly get a lot more aware of how to position yourself, or even just dumb little things like when you turn to lift the leg up such that the pedal's down on the other side. Just seemingly simple things like that,
Right?
You just don't realize unless someone tells it to you, or you fall on your face.
Well, this is kind of a rare opportunity we're going to get here to ask this question. Of course, maybe there's not a good reference point because you were cycling in Boston in what, in the early 90s?
Yeah.
Early to mid 90s or so.
Early 90s, yeah.
Okay, so. It's not really a fair comparison to ask which city was bike friendlier, because a revolution has taken place in San Francisco probably in the last 10 years or so, and yet, were you there during the during any of those initial beginnings, or how would you compare the two cities?
It's hard to say because, for better or for worse, I didn't bike around that much over on the Boston side. I was over on the Cambridge side of the Charles River.
I see. Okay. Okay.
And admittedly, also, I think the threshold for when I would bike versus take the public transportation system, and that's one way we can contrast the two cities. Over there, they have the T, which is like their subway system, and it generally works pretty well. But I wouldn't find myself riding that much because I could just hop on and take the T, and it was like 75 cents or 85 cents when it was there. Pretty cheap. Whereas here in San Francisco, at least today, I feel that for most routes I can, with a bike, I think you can either come close to or even beat Muni from a time perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It may be a little sweaty when you get there.
Yeah.
You're at destination, but you've kind of integrated your workout into your routine too.
Great. So how often, how much of your time would you say do you spend on a bike? Let me ask that question differently. How often are you, that's not fair to ask. More pointedly, what I want to ask is, how many miles or how many hours a week are you rolling the streets of San Francisco on a bicycle?
It's always good to be more. Pretty much every time I'm going out that's anywhere besides my own little area or neighborhood, I'm usually on bike, but I don't know. I'd kind of average maybe half an hour a day
mm-hmm.
of just okay. general commuting.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll do the kind of weekend ride either down the peninsula or up to the Marin Headlands or in the valley, that kind of thing. But I'm mainly, if I do the Monday through Friday sort of utilitarian riding, I feel like I've gotten sort of my time in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I haven't been doing I occasionally would do Mount Tam, but I haven't been doing that kind of stuff as much lately.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever ride critical mass?
I generally am there. In fact, that's one of the motivations that got me moving up to San Francisco. I just saw that on TV. It was all enamored with the whole reclamation of public space. And I kind of said to myself, gee, I still want to be there. I saw it on TV, of course, during the kind of, the infamous summer of 97. I think nowadays it's much more of a celebratory thing.
Great.
Now it's like a chance, sort of once a month, to see familiar faces and sort of catch up with people
right.
who you haven't seen the last one. It's more of a social ride now, I think.
Great. Well, that deserves to be underscored. Here you are, a high-profile MIT graduate degreed computer person, and people like yourself, I know you're not going to let me give you any kind of laudatory commentary, but I'm going to say it anyway. And then we've got someone like Leah. And so a lot of high-profile people are coming to San Francisco because of critical mass.
Yeah.
And it was made to look like it was a bunch of goons that don't pay taxes
yeah.
that and all this kind of stuff. And yet it's amazing how I'm finding that it's the kind of people that are attracted to San Francisco cycling are people that were like yourself were enamored with this critical mass concept of public space, reclamation
yeah.
thereof. You take Dave Snyder, who we've done a podcast with, hopefully going to get that to show up pretty soon. And Dave... Dave came out to San Francisco, came out, and he was one of the initial beginning founders of that concept of critical mass, but he decided that was the kind of social work he was going to do, was
right.
with bicycling. And he was trained in that type of thing. He was trying to figure out if he wanted to be over in South America or Africa, and he decided he can be right here with kind of public space for the people, and people of his ilk, people he hangs with. So that's really, thank you for that.
Oh, I mean, we should thank the Dave Snyders, the Chris Carlsons, the Cashes. Those are the people that
yeah.
sort of paved the groundwork.
Exactly, right.
It's a lot easier to ride. I mean, admittedly, it's pretty easy to ride mass now because there's almost like a police escort.
Right,
back then,
right.
They had to stand up with.
Definitely is, yeah. Yeah, boy. And I was down in Santa Cruz when all that stuff was coming over the transom, so I didn't, I kind of was on around the edges of it, so I didn't really get to kind of help actually do the rides. I did a couple of them, but I wasn't really there right at the very beginning ones, so, and it also seemed kind of, for me to come up all the way from Santa Cruz, it just felt, something didn't feel right about it. So I did one or two of them, but that was about it.
I certainly recommend it if you're in the area or sort of happen to be touring the area, but I mean, it makes no sense to kind of fly across the country.
Right. Although there are people that do it. There are, and I've seen them on their rental bikes.
Right.
So
I mean, I would definitely recommend it if you try to work it in perhaps with a vacation or wedding where you had to go anyway.
Right.
But
wow.
Everyone should kind of just ride their own little wherever they are.
Right. Wow. Did you have to? We both grew up in the Bay Area, so this question may not be appropriate to ask, but I'll just ask it anyway. Does it ever get too cold for you to ride?
I learned a funny term from my friend Matt. He said most San Franciscans have a weather amnesia, and I'm certainly one of them. You go out there thinking, oh, you know, it'll be fine, you'll be okay, and then you'll freeze your ass off. certainly one has to be prepared.
Uh-huh. Well, you got a whole different weather pattern than what we had in Hayward.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about that for a second there. It's like the fog. The summertime fog, and when it's beautiful everywhere else, you guys are sitting in a fog dump or a fog bucket or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
The natural air conditioning. How does that work for you? How does that sit with you? Does that bother you? Are you able to work with that? Do you have workarounds? Well, tell us about your situation as it relates to the fog.
At least I have one layer, which is generally the windbreaker, and that's the kind of neon jacket anyway. Probably a good thing to wear if you're kind of buzzing around. So that's at least one layer. I also have arm warmers. I occasionally wear them. And sometimes I throw a kind of a light jacket in my bag. I've been known to, if you're feeling cold, it does hurt to pedal faster too. I just get worked up a little.
Right.
So that's always good. Never hurts to bring a light jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Even on days when you think it's t-shirt weather, I've certainly kicked myself before. It depends on the neighborhood too thing. I mean, you mentioned the whole San Francisco versus East Bay thing, mm-hmm. which is definitely true. When I go over to visit my parents' house, I'll be like, oh my God, it's so hot over there.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll come back and freeze on the way back home here.
Right.
But it's even different from whether you're on the west side, whether you're down in the Mission, which is only nice and sunny, or whether you're down by the marina, where it can, of course, be quite windy. Even within San Francisco, where you're going, you can cross them, I guess the word is microclimate. You can run into different microclimates.
Okay, now where these microclimates are concerned, do you go out like one of the worst feelings in the world is to leave when it's nice.
Yep.
And then in a couple hours time, it's just grisly.
Yep.
Are you always prepared? Do you try to be prepared for that?
I try to be if I remember. The thing is, the whole trick about sticking your head out the door and seeing how the weather is like a very much of a red herring. I've done that before.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it looks nice now. And then
right. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. Especially not in San Francisco.
Yeah. And so the jacket never hurts.
Yeah. Now, how do you carry all these the articles of clothing? Do you carry them on your back? Do you have a rack on your bike?
I do have a rack. I sort of alternate between something I actually stick on the rack versus holding the bag, like a typical kind of messy bag.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it really depends on whether I'm going to be making a lot of stops. Because if I'm going somewhere where I know I can bring the bike in, then I don't mind having something on the rack, or like I don't have panniers, but the kind of pannier style arrangement where it's open. Whereas if you're making a lot of stops, sometimes it's easier to have like the messenger bag, keep that on you, and all you have to lock up then is the bike. You don't have to worry about stripping down the bike if you're going to forget.
Okay.
I believe in both. It just kind of depends on the situation.
Right. Okay. Now we've talked about the fog. We've talked about the weather. A couple of the gotchas. San Francisco is known for its legendary hills. What's the steepest hill in San Francisco? What's the percent grade?
It's tied for two. There's one. It's Filbert, between Leavenworth and Hyde, and that's sort of in the Russian Hill area where I live. It's actually just two blocks from the squiggly part of Lombard.
Uh huh.
And I often think that that should be just as much a tourist attraction as that part. So over on Church at 22nd, they're both 31.5%
Wow. Great. 31%, 31.5%. Do you ever go down those hills?
I don't know. I find it actually scary to go down because the wheel, maybe because my tires are pretty bald and I
right.
really get some new ones.
Uh-huh.
It's a little too cheap, but you have to go down really straight because the minute you turn to the side, actually the same thing is true going uphill, but it becomes almost too hard to kind of tack and go back and forth.
Uh-huh.
It's easy to fall over and have the wheel slip out from under you. So I have gone down. I pretty much go down them almost as, I think, more rarely than I go up them.
Wow.
I'd almost rather walk down.
Okay. How long of a stretch of real estate are you covering when you're going up 31%?
Oh, it's pretty short, admittedly.
A block?
It's even what makes them so steep is these are blocks where it's sort of like a, I want to say they're sort of, they're less than a block because they level off for a while before they get to the end of the block. So that's how they become so steep, as opposed to just taking an ordinary block-long street. These have a really steep incline, and then they level off. I think that's how they get their grade.
Huh.
But
wow.
What makes them the steepest is that they're not even the length of a block.
Wow. Now, what is that website again where people can go and watch you climbing these hills?
Sure. It's called Russian Hill Roulette, just all strung together. Russian Hill is the neighborhood. Russian Roulette, of course, it's sort of a bad pun.
I think it's worthy.
Yeah. So it's called Russian Hill Roulette, and it counts down the six deepest streets of San Francisco. They're by no means necessarily the steepest, the longest
uh-huh.
hills. All of these are just one block long or even less than that.
Uh-huh.
But it's sort of a nice little, I'm sort of a one-trick pony with these things.
Uh-huh.
I just sort of go up and then I, at the top of the hill, I wonder what the hell why I did it.
Well, I'll tell you, you're an inspiration for a lot of your local cyclists there that use wiggles to get around hills.
Right.
You advocate just going right over them and straight through them.
Yeah, that was part of a little bit of the reason I did it. I certainly don't make any point to go up these unless I really have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I also I don't think people should avoid them like the plague, not mm-hmm. being necessarily used, but just any incline. I'm not doubting that it's, of course, more work to go up a hill than not, but I certainly think that if people could just maybe power up maybe a block or two, it would save them some time as opposed to doing these mile-long circuitous
right,
routes.
Right. Or for that matter, how about walking up them?
Yeah.
You know? How steep are these? When you're going up these streets, mm-hmm. are they so steep? Do people live on them, first of all?
They're definitely people living on them.
Oh, my God. Do they look out their windows at you like you're some kind of strange oddity?
Yeah, when I was filming it, I felt sort of weird because, I kind of did this by myself. So I sort of set up the camera. I used some different angles and some different techniques. But at least for the first few hills, there's this kind of bottom, middle, top pattern where I sort of put the camera at the bottom of the hill. I'd ride by it, ride back down, pick up the camera, move it to the middle of the hill,
uh-huh.
go back down, ride by it again. Go back down and then pick up the camera, move it to the top of the hill and ride by that. So as I was doing this, I'm sure someone was looking out the window thinking, what the hell is he doing?
Uh-huh.
And why?
Uh-huh.
And we get some weird comments as I was doing it. It's like, what are you doing? I can't believe you rode up that or something like that. And I just tried to say, well, it's only a block. It's not that bad.
Okay, now, do you ever see, when you're on those hills, I guess do you see many people walking on them, or cars driving up them, or is there much traffic taking place out there?
There's a surprising amount of traffic, yeah.
Yeah? Oh, God.
In where at least, hill number 1, 3, and 5, the rest of the Russian Hill area, it's, my district is sort of the most densely populated areas. It's also right near Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a lot of, it's not like detached there, right? These are all kind of apartment buildings and other kind of forms of dense housing. some apartment towers too. So there's definitely a lot of foot traffic, and admittedly, I don't think there's that much cycling, you know, or certainly not as much as sort of the Mission or Haight or Soma, other kind of flatter neighborhoods in San Francisco. But it's actually not too bad to get around just walking.
Okay, have you done any research on this? You say 31%, do you know of any? I know Pittsburgh's got some pretty steep hills. Are there any that are steeper than 31% that you know of anywhere?
There are. I think in there's the Fargo Street, or there's this area, Echo Park, I believe, of Los Angeles, where they have some 32s or 33s.
Oh, really?
So that's even steeper.
Wow.
Put it out of the way. And then you're right, in Pittsburgh, there's this Canton, the street, mm-hmm. that's supposedly 37.
Whoa.
And then in New Zealand, there's a 38.
God.
If you could believe that. So.
In New Zealand?
But, yeah, New Zealand. Uh-huh. I think it's supposed to be the steepest street in the world.
Uh-huh.
I do think that what makes San Francisco special is that you're sort of, like we were just saying, in this kind of urban blight.
Uh-huh.
I think all the other cities that we mentioned, it's sort of out of the way, or it's not where a lot of people go anyway.
Uh-huh.
As you saw in that one movie, as soon as I got to the top of the hill, I saw this U-Haul truck coming at me. I'm about to go down it, and about to ruin my shot, so I had to madly dash across to try to cut it off. And then I finally waved it through, because I think they were moving them out of town, and they were probably completely confused
uh-huh,
as
uh-huh.
I was riding it. So you're sort of dealing with, and then there's, of course, cops, kind of there's that cop car that made a brief appearance that was looking at me strangely.
Wow.
Going up. So
have you ever seen
sort of in this kind of, go ahead.
You ever seen a car stalled on those things that couldn't make it?
Oh, yeah, no. It's tough to bike. It's always tough to drive them.
Uh-huh.
I unfortunately don't know how to drive stick shift.
Right.
But I imagine it's not fun either. Or parallel parking, if you can imagine that.
Wow.
I remember one time
people parallel park on that street?
I remember one time my mom was looking out the window saying, oh, my God, hit the car in front of him. Hit the car in back. Right. But people kind of, it's just a known, if you look, you can tell a San Francisco bumper when you look at one. Because
uh-huh.
it's got all the dings on, it's all nicked up and scratched.
Oh.
Because it's just almost expected practice that people kind of ram the car in front,
uh-huh.
ram the car in back to try to squeeze in.
Wow. That's
another reason to be car free.
Uh-huh.
Another reason to be car free.
Yeah, indeed. Wow. Wow. Okay, well, let's kind of not talk. We're kind of, let's leave the hills alone for a second
okay.
here and talk about San Francisco cycling in general. How do motorists treat you there?
Well, it's hopefully getting better. It's never easy. And that's one thing I had to learn, is that you can never really let your guard down or feel completely free.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with work from the people that we just previously mentioned, like Leah, Dave,
mm-hmm.
They've done a lot to sort of educate motorists that, hey, belong on the road. There's, of course, that sign and that section of the California Vehicle Code that you're allowed the use of the full lane.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly helped in our favor. There's some things that have made it almost, I think, worse, too. You could imagine with cell phones. There's a lot of distracted drivers. There's just more cars. There's larger vehicles, too. So I'd say the whole SUV revolution in the last 10 years has made it tougher, too. So it's sort of a mixed bag.
Hmm. Okay. So you got that gotcha to go along with all the other things about riding a bike in San Francisco. How about cable car tracks and railroad tracks? Yeah. They're ubiquitous. You ever gone down on those?
I have. And I think it was the first week or after I moved up, I was all sort of, so glad to be up here. And then I went down on the high street cable car.
Oh, no.
On my skinny road tires.
So oh, man.
I learned the hard way.
That could be
pretty... A tourist was nice enough to help me get out of my cleats, too.
Oh, God.
I'm sure that was part of his San Francisco touring experience, helping a local idiot get off the road before he ran over by a cable car.
God.
No, I have gone down in them, and they're surprisingly slippery, and I'm almost to this day, I'm still not very, like, absolutely confident going over the rails.
Right.
Definitely have to pay attention.
Right. Wow. They're it's like uncanny, wicked how slippery they are. How about car doors?
Yeah, no, I haven't ever. Well, I've been very slightly doored a couple of times where I think I was 3 feet out and safe enough. And yet with those long car doors, like with the larger cars that we were just talking about, kind of encroaching on, like at some of the bikes in San Francisco or Sharrows, those are those little decals that are painted, the stencils painted on the street, are laid down. But as cars have gotten bigger and bigger, or as like parking has maybe gotten more and more erratic, the right-hand edge of the bike lane isn't necessarily that safe. And you've got to really be out on the left-hand side, either almost on the line or even further out, to really be safe. I think they recommend, 4 feet now? Maybe for those long coupe doors, I guess.
Right.
To be really in the clear.
I've
been doored where it would like just kind of scratch along, I guess, with the side of my right pedal. And then I didn't manage to kind of like, it's like gymnastics. You can stick the landing or you fight to save the landing. But yeah, and then I looked back, kind of give a mean stare. But I've been lucky so far with the dooring.
Wow. Well, I say car doors. I'm now speaking to the people that are out there listening, because there's a ubiquitous amount of car doors opening and closing in San Francisco with all the cars and tourists and business people that are in and out. And it's definitely a hazard, along with the tracks. I want to spend a little time with the tracks. The fact that they're ubiquitous. They are almost everywhere you want to go in San Francisco. There are cable car tracks. There's muni tracks. There's what other kind of tracks?
Streetcar.
What's it called?
The streetcar. The muni.
The street.
Car.
Yeah. And it's just everywhere you go, there's the track. It's like old McDonald had a farm. Old McDonald had a old San Francisco had a track. Here a track. There a track. Almost everywhere you go, there's a track. And I've heard it said from other people we've talked about. There are places in San Francisco where there are no tracks. The neighborhoods maybe out by Golden Gate Park or something like that. But really, where most of your work is done on a bicycle, where you're obviating the need for a car trip by riding a bike, you've got to deal with tracks. You've got to be able to kind of be aware about those and also aware about car doors. So what other cities, what other big cities besides Boston have you biked in, Frank?
Other than the San Francisco Bay Area and Boston, I haven't really biked anywhere. Certainly been around, and whenever I go to another city, I try to observe the cycling. But no, I haven't ridden in too many other areas.
Would you say that of what you've seen then, that San Francisco is the most closest to bicycle heaven of anything that you've had an opportunity to observe?
We're trying. I think it has a really good portion of, I mean, as the Bike Coalition's tagline is, like, everyday transportation. I think it's really good in that sense. So I think it's got like one of the highest percentages of people who try to make it as part of their way of getting around.
And you see a lot of people on bikes there, do you not?
I definitely do.
A lot of your buddies, and it's like there's just like a whole rank and file of people that are rolling the streets on two wheels. Wouldn't that not be correct to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the joys is when you go down one of the usual corridors, whether it be Market Street, which is like the main thoroughfare in San Francisco, and you see someone, you run into random people you know, it's always kind of a good feeling. I said to other people, when you run into other people on car, it's because you're screaming at them or gotten into an accident, right? But it's one of those things where it's a sense of community, I guess.
Right. Do you see any trikes out there? Is there anybody rolling a tricycle out there?
Not many. I take it during like the closed stretch of Golden Gate Park on Sundays. I do see some there.
How about recumbents?
Recumbents? I do see some.
Yeah.
Incumbents.
Okay.
Not too many, because you definitely want to be, I don't want to take the same SUV mentality, but you want to be high enough where you can see stuff. And I think that's one challenge of recumbents is you're so low to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely got to have your, this is not a, at least in the kind of very compact section where I am, it's definitely kind of heads up riding.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to kind of zone out.
Down. Having ridden a recumbent bicycle since 1983, now riding a high wheeler, I will say that the trade-off between being closer to the ground on a recumbent and right. not having that panoramic view that you have on an upright, I think there's a wash because you see things from a recumbent's perspective. You're looking out the same field of vision, plane of vision, as if you were in a car. So you're seeing everything the car would see.
I see.
And you're a lot closer
it's
to the ground.
More looking forward as opposed to looking down.
Correct, yeah. You're not going to land on your head or your arms or your upper body. You're going to land on your butt. So,
right.
I don't know. I feel like in that way a recumbent might... It goes back and forth.
Right.
It's a safety trade-off.
Or I put it like Andy Thornley puts it. A corollary of what he said was, what he says, where it's his mission to... try to make it so you don't have to ride in San Francisco with a helmet.
Right.
Maybe a corollary is like you should be able to ride in a recumbent just as safely.
Right on.
That should be our goal.
Right on. Well, I my own self, I feel safer on a recumbent bicycle anywhere
okay.
I go. I really do. And in San Francisco in particular. Just because I'm closer to the ground.
Right.
And if I do go down those tracks, it's not so gnarly. What's your favorite thing about San Francisco cycling, Frank?
Favorite thing about San Francisco cycling? So many things. Maybe just the numbers of people riding.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned critical mass earlier. It's always kind of cool when you have a stoplight, you've got a small gaggle of people, like what we call a mini mass.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of all stick together and kind of get along. You almost, to take an analogy from road racing, it's almost like a little pace line where, depending on different
right.
people take turns.
Right. Pulling.
Blowing and going off the.
Breaking the wind.
Right.
Okay.
And you can generally, I think the favorite thing is that it's very practical. Like you can, we'll be passing cars, and of course they're all annoyed. But. You'll get to your destination in not too long.
Huh. So you're finding you can run little pace lines then?
Yeah.
Yeah? Oh, wow.
It's fun to kind of like, you kind of latch on.
Uh-huh.
People do. And,
wow. Would that be going down, which street are you talking about? Market or?
The main street I go down probably is Polk.
Yeah.
In Market.
Uh-huh.
I think sometimes I go down Valencia too, although that's kind of. The surface of the moon right now.
Right.
Getting some repaving work, hopefully soon.
Okay, well, besides hanging out with all your buddies on the street, do you guys go somewhere? Is there a favorite hangout that you can go and find cyclists in San Francisco?
The stretches where we just mentioned, one of the things I like at the San Francisco Bike Coalition office, they have a little plot of their membership, and of course it's densest in... I think south of Market, the Haight, and the Mission, but almost anywhere in there, I don't want to say it's like bicycle mecca, but you'll at least, like if you're on a bike there, you won't be out of company.
Uh-huh. Okay. Is there like a bar that you hang out in, a club that everyone goes to? Or
There's Zeitgeist where I was lucky enough to have my film show there recently as part of the Zeitgeist Film Festival.
Uh-huh. Okay. Are the Zeitgeist owners, are they bicycle people?
They're both bike and motorbike.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's all sort of all crowd. That's certainly a plot for hanging out and other many others.
Great.
Or just anywhere in that area, I'm sure you'll see plenty of bikes.
Let's talk about kids for a second, the future
sure.
of cycling. Do you see many kids riding their bikes in San Francisco?
Not as many as there should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the kind of more trends that most people are trying to watch is just what's happening to kids in San Francisco. There, unfortunately, I think the all too common thing is that people move up here and then they start to think about having kids, or when after they have kids, they move out to the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the different reasons is there's just not spaces for them to learn how to ride, right? It's not like we all, I mean, you look at the two of us, right? We started riding off into suburbia, and that's what makes us comfortable riding in an urban environment.
Right.
I wonder exactly that. Where are the kids in San Francisco going to learn how to ride?
Right.
Besides, like, one Saturday afternoon.
Right. What's going to happen to them? You know, what's going to happen to our future? You know, without the kids coming up along the rear to kind of push the envelope for that. It's sad.
In our bicycle advocacy, like, well, I guess I'd call myself the better for worse Gen X, but there's a lot of the Gen Y people, the people that are teens and 20s now, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just stunned to hear sometimes they, when they say, like, where can I go to learn how to ride? And then I point them at the cities, like, urban bike classes, but even those are more geared towards people who already know how to ride.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They just want to learn how to ride in an urban environment, right? The whole hand signals or lane positioning.
Right.
There's a disturbing amount of people who just plain don't know how to balance and ride, and that's, I imagine it's like music, but they spread. It's a lot easier to learn in your youth when you have that low center of gravity and you can get all nicked up at 6 and not so bad about it. As opposed to 20 to 16.
Wow. So. Okay, well, let's wrap up with this question. What do you think about a network of safely bikeable roads that connect to Boston?
I saw that, yeah, that they began in Boston, and I wouldn't have dreamt like a dozen years ago to ride all the way back from Boston to California. But I would love to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're, especially they recently celebrated, what was it, the 50th anniversary of the interstate highway system. And, of course, that led to the whole way, like, you have to get around by car now.
But right.
I would, even for, like, more modest goals, let's say going up to Sacramento, or, who knows, Tahoe, right? You should be able to ride there.
Right.
I would love to see it, and I think it encouraged people who are in an urban environment. One of the reasons they sometimes say they need a car is, well, I need to get away on the weekends. Well, if you could get away on the weekends by bike,
wouldn't that be sweet?
That would be a great
thing. We've got to make something like that happen. You know, and it's just, it's going to seem, when we get further down the line with our years, it's going to seem incredible that we couldn't. It really is. You know. Right now, it just seems like, well, that's just the way it is. No one's really ever challenged that positioning, you know. Why can't we get in our bikes and just roll for a vacation? Why can't we go to Sacramento? Why can't we go to Reno or to places that are typically car trips, you know? And why can't it be such that along the way that it's a joyous circumstance, you know, like where there's all kinds of services and restaurants and bike shops and things that make it possible for our biking efforts, easily possible. And that's what I foresee in what the National Bicycle Greenway foresees for a coast-to-coast connection from San Francisco to Boston initially, on an initial basis. So, wow. Well, thanks for taking some time for this. Is there anything you care to add, Frank?
No, I think what we already talked about is good, and I would encourage anyone, I guess there is one thing, that's it. I know this is more of a bike podcast, but I encourage anyone, that was sort of the first film I did. I encourage anyone to try to channel their idea into a little film short, whether it's a bike related or not. I had a good time making it, and I encourage anyone else to do so.
Okay, say that site again. Where can they find this film again?
It's called Russian Hill Roulette. .com.
Okay, and the spelling is just, it's all dictionary spelling, nothing fancy,
all
no hyphens, spelling. No periods, no...
No periods.
Great.
You know, one L, two T's.
Great, excellent, okay. So if someone wants to find out about Frank's amazing episodic adventure of traveling up five of the steepest hills in San Francisco, fueled by coffee...
Yeah, definitely.
We're talking 31%, and to give a comparison of 31%, what contextually could you? That's the same as going up what the layperson would view a 31% hill as what, three times as steep as the hills they would go into Yellowstone or climbing over the Rockies or something like that, or How steep is 31%? Are you going to fall over backwards when you try to walk up it? Or
right. I guess the way like I describe it to people is just imagine, like, for every 10 feet you walk across, right, going 10, 3 feet up, too. That's what they mean by the 30%. But, yeah, I don't know how it compares. I mean, I know with the Tour de France, they've got it's a much lower grade, but, of course, it goes on for an endless amount of miles, which, of course, like with all respect to those guys, that's much harder to do, just kind of sustain.
Right.
Racing pace over 10 miles. That's a long climb or one of those Alpe d'Huez or Mont Ventoux kind of things.
Yeah.
That's so much harder.
Uh-huh.
So this is sort of a joke. It's kind of like one street.
Right.
It looks visually interesting.
It's fun, man. Totally fun. It is. And if someone else, if you want to see it, you can find it at our site at bikeroute.com. Click on the Mayor's Ride schedule and go to the San Francisco section. And you'll see Frank's picture, which he's going to send me. Right, Frank?
Oh, yeah, I'll get
this. Okay. I'm just asking you now. And so there will be a picture there along with the link to his site. So, okay, well, that said, I think it's pretty much wrap-up time, Frank. It's been great talking to you.
Good talking to you.
It really has. And I thank you for the time you took for this and for us today, guy.
No problem.
All right, Frank. See you later.
All right. Good job.
Bye. That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.